Welcome to this Euretina Independent Medical Education podcast, supported by Roche and Apellis. This two-part series on the management of diabetic macular edema is presented by Professor Eduardo Medina, Chairman of Ophthalmology at the University of Padova in Italy, and Dr. Dina Tsur, Senior Ophthalmologist and Retina Specialist at the Tel Aviv Sieraski Medical Center, Israel. In this episode, they cover diagnosis of diabetic macular edema, including identifying its unique features, the imaging modalities they use to find them, and how diagnostic data is used to inform treatment decisions. They also touch on monitoring patients. There's a lot to learn in a few minutes, so without further ado, we will hand over the discussion to Professor Medina and Dr. Tsur.
Okay, good morning, and welcome to the Euretina IMI video interviews in this particular case on DME treatment fundamentals. I'm Eduardo Medina, and today I'm joined by Dr. Dina Tsur from Israel. Hello, Dina, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Eduardo, for inviting.
Yeah, and we want to discuss about the best practices for diagnosing and treating an intriguing, a still intriguing disorder. Not very simple as probably neovascular AMD, but diabetic macular edema with the characteristics, special characteristics of the patient and the disorder. So I think that we may begin, okay, with a question. Dean, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah, okay. What are the unique distinguishing features of the diabetic macular edema patients from the demographic and personal point of view? And are these characteristics impacting on the diagnosis and the treatment approach, Dina?
First of all, talking about diabetic macular edema patients versus AMD, generally, diabetic patients tend to be younger. They are mostly in working age compared to patients with age-related macular degeneration that tend to be elderly. Of course, there's an overlapping age group. And with everything in medicine, it starts with anamnesis. Of course, you want to know if the patient is diabetic, and if he's diabetic, if he is already suffering from any other end organ damage, how the systemic control is, what his treatments are, if maybe there were changes in systemic control lately. And of course, if he has been under previous screening visits for his eye conditions. I think this is the first approach that we want to know when we see a new patient.
So in this population we just shortly defined, do you use specific imaging modalities or diagnostic modalities for the initial diagnosis and the follow-up? What do you think compared to the past?
I think in diabetes, the most important stage is even before they come to see us retina specialists, and it's in the screening programs. And screening can be done either with fundus, color fundus images, or lately also OCT has been used because the screening programs has shown that relying only on the evaluation of color fundus images for the macular condition, there's a lot of false positive referrals. So lately, the UK at least is also using OCT exams for a screening for diabetic retinopathy and diabetic maculopathy. When they already have reached our clinic, and of course, the first step is always a complete ophthalmological exams, and structural OCT should be part of this for diabetic patients if you see any involvement of the macula. At the first diagnosis, when there is at least moderate non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy or worse conditions, I also like to have a fluorescein angiography for baseline evaluation. And it's not only for the diabetic retinopathy severity staging, but also if there should be a case where we still can use focal laser, of course, it gives us additional information. This is the first diagnostic approach.
Yeah, I agree about this. You make some important points. One is the screening. Currently, we are performing, as you underlined, the screening of diabetic retinopathy in general with fundus pictures, and then analyzing them manually or by human examiner, and probably in the future by artificial intelligence system. Do you think that in the future the screening will be done just with the fundus picture, or OCT may contribute to this?
I think it depends mainly on the availability of the machines, and because there are already some instruments out there that are quite available in terms of cost, and they do they obtain good color fundus images with OCT on site. And it also depends who is doing the screening, because certainly you don't need OCT imaging for every diabetic patient. The majority won't have any involvement of the diabetic of the retina in early stages, but maybe from a certain degree, or if a human is doing the images, I think it would spare time and efforts in the later workup when they already have the OCT.
Another point before entering just in clinical practice, there are a lot of rumors about the, you correctly pointed to the fluorescein angiography, the value of at least at baseline of fluorescein angiography. Do you think that at the current moment may OCTA replace fluorescein angiography or not?
In my daily clinical practice, it does not replace fluorescein angiography yet for several reasons. First of all, even you have the best machine and it's doing the collage, it doesn't reach the far periphery yet. Secondly, it's more time intensive to obtain the images, at least for the moment. Maybe in the future it will be easier. And you have to remember that still in the workup of diabetic patients, there are cases that we want to know if something is leaking, and the OCTA is not delivering this information at the moment. So I think in terms of microaneurysms that are active or not, or treatable lesions, that's another question there. The OCTA at the moment does not replace the FA in certain questions, but for sure you can replace part of the exams by OCTA. It depends on the clinical question you want to answer.
After these considerations, how do you manage a patient coming to you for the first time with diabetic macular edema, but he received this information from another ophthalmologist or something else? How do you implement the workflow of the diagnostic imaging before deciding with the patient which is the best treatment, if necessary?
Okay, this is an important question. First of all, it needs to involve also functional testing. We want to know what the best corrected visual acuity is, because it depends the treatment decision. Patients with preserved vision don't necessarily need prompt treatment. Then a complete ophthalmological exam, including color fundus images, structural OCT, and as we said, fluorescein angiography, depending on the DR severity. OCTA is helpful in a lot of cases. I don't do it routinely on everybody at the moment. And then I discuss all the findings together with the patient, because there is some weight to patient considerations, a part of only the ophthalmological findings that we will get by these exams.
Okay, very nice. Just a question on OCT in particular, because you correctly, perfectly underlined that structural OCT is much important. Are you looking for some called biomarkers or just at the thickness of the foveal area?
I think everybody, each of us, does some qualitative assessment of the OCT. Even without purposely doing it, because it gives us a lot of information, and not only the central retina thickness. It depends on where the thickening is, if it's center involving, if it's fovea, where it's coming from. And of course, if there is already some structural damage, which we know that will be irreparable, like a photoreceptor irregularity or severe irregularity of the retinal inner layers, which are bad prognostic markers, and this needs to be discussed with the patient so the expectations will be aligned.
Yeah, I agree with this. And I would like to know if you agree also that some other biomarkers on OCT, in particular the subfoveal serous detachment or the so-called, that I like, hyperreflective SI, may be an indication of the neuroinflammatory component, trying to identify, as we discussed during the treatment, the next section, the treatment of the patient as first line or second line, depending on the type of treatment, according to personal DME phenotype of the patient.
Yeah, definitely. I think it provides us a lot of information. It's non-invasive, and we need to extract the most of it.
Okay. You are working in a center where, at least for the AMD patients, the home OCT devices have been developed, testing, and validated. Any idea about the use of this approach in DME, or it is different because of the difference in the disorder?
So the main effort indeed was put into age-related macular degeneration in terms of home monitoring, but we are now starting recruitment of patients for diabetic macular edema to see how they get along with the instrument and what additional information we can draw out of it. Because I think in terms of, we will talk about that later on, but in an era of long-acting agents, this might change our management of patients if we know what is going on in between visits.
Just to briefly summarize, we mentioned the importance of DME as a blinding condition because it is affecting the working population, which is an important part of the adult population in the world. The second point that you clearly defined is the workflow, the examination, and you pointed and remember to us the best corrected visual acuity to decide if to treat or not to treat and the current possibilities. Okay, so we thank you people who followed Dr. Zinazur and myself. We hope that this video interview will improve your current practice, which is the goal of this program. And we thank you and bye-bye. Dina.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
I think you'll agree Professor Medina and Dr. Tsur explained their approach to diagnosis and monitoring of patients with DME very well. Thanks to Apelles and Roche for their support of this Euretina Independent Medical Education podcast. Look out for part two in this series, when Professor Medina and Dr. Tsur will discuss their management approaches, including the all-important patient communication to improve compliance.